Let's face it, parenting is the most important job on earth. Every day presents a stack of different challenges, and more often than not, the answer is outside of the box. On this podcast, we will offer proven strategies, interview pioneers in education, give insights into how to be successful parents, and even share our imperfect experiences of being parents ourselves. We're all in on this journey, and we will span the globe to find out what is working and who has the answers. This is the Sound Foundations for Parenting podcast. Here are your hosts, Darren McCarthy and Brian Powers.
Hey, Darren, what's going on?
Hello, Brian.
So today we are speaking with Rachel Wise. Rachel has her own blog, educationandbehavior.com, and definitely a huge resource for parents.
Yeah, it's funny when you said, you know, she has her own blog. I think that's kind of where it started and expanded into this avalanche of information. You go in there for a couple of seconds and you realize that this is really a fantastic resource when it comes to everything. You know, that's why it's behavior, you know, and education. And there's just so many different resources in there. It's fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, even to the point, I'm just looking at it now, she's on here, she put together like her top articles and almost into a book, a guide for parents and teachers to improve behavior, increase confidence in children. That's really, that was one of her, that was the topic we wanted to cover in this episode.
Yeah, I mean, during times like these, behavior is something we can all resonate with, obviously. And it's kind of like, where do you go to get the conversation started, or to, you know, as a parent, we always talk about that. It's like, what's the one thing I can do today to make a difference? And then you realize that one thing is never really one thing. Yeah. That, you know, it's kind of, it's almost like a thread, right? And you grab in that thread and then you think it's this, and then you head you into another direction. And the way that she's got all this information organized, it's segmented in the right way. So you don't grab onto the thread and then lose yourself.
Correct.
You find the right information in the right way. And you could tell the way Rachel thinks, it's very, it's almost like we went to the same college, you know, it's like the same concept, or, you know, the college I call the, you know, the school of street learning,
yep. Hard
learning
knocks.
The hard way. Right. Yeah. So when we got into the woods about, you know, our own kids and our own, you know, the behaviors we're dealing with, she had some great answers, and she's got background, you know, in the schools as well as, you know, privately and this same scenario where it's like she saw a niche and started to run with it. And then it became this fantastic resource.
Yeah. I mean, she gave us, she pulled out a couple of articles to give us to put, you know, links in the show notes here. So definitely check them out. And then, you know, kind of we went over really just effective strategies, like nuggets that you can pull out and put into practice, you know, right away and not, you know, not drive yourself crazy and see some results.
Yeah. I love when an experienced professional can take things and put it in a concise manner where you can really just implement it right away.
Yep. No, you definitely.
Know, and she was big on language too. So we started to talk about the ABCs of behavior. Like we had talked to a couple, you know, therapists before, you know, and, she went right to, well, sometimes it's the antecedent is not having the language to express what they wanted to. And then I was like, oh, this is right up our alley. This is what we talk about all the time. So
yeah, no, definitely.
She uses, she says, you know, use emphatic statements. I understand this makes you angry, and not talking down to kids, but getting them involved and, you know, seeing them on eye level, not only literally, but also from a sense of, I get it. I understand where you are. And let me think the way you think in this moment.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I tend to, we talk about that. It's like, I've started to put these into practice already. And it's like, cause you forget, you know, you think you're the boss and you're the kind of captain of the ship, but it's like, you know, who doesn't like to be talked to the way everybody else wants to be spoken to. So, you know, it just makes sense, but sometimes we get so caught up in the day to day. We forget about that stuff. So she definitely reminded us and gave us some tools to, like I said, put into place really quick.
Yeah, and we'll have a link on the show notes as we always do. We'll also have a link on the website for this one because those resources are going to be something that parents can use well into the future.
I say it all the time, but I think this is just the beginning with Rachel. We'll see her many more times again.
Yeah, absolutely. Part of the core group here.
Awesome. Let's get into it.
Let's get started. Yep.
Hey, so Dan, before we get into the episode, we actually have a sponsor for this one. Our friends at Learning Ears, Gail Moyers. Go ahead. Tell us a little bit more about the Learning Ears, though.
So Gail, this is developed by Gail Moyers, educational therapist, and Learning Ears is an ear voice training designed to improve expressive language, listening, reading, attention, and executive function. Imagine one program doing all that, bro.
I'll take it. What are some things that parents should be looking out for that, Learning Ears would help?
So the bottom line is that this program just makes sense, right? So science tells us the auditory system is the first system to fully develop in utero. So when you consider the auditory system being kind of vital to the whole learning process, then how do you address the auditory system? How do you train it? And so the bottom line is, they use the listening program to train the ear, and then they use the voice as part of the whole program. Once the ear is trained, the voice is trained. Once the voice is trained, the ear gets trained again naturally. And that's really the process. It's a 20-week program, and it only takes a half hour a day for parents. And also you get a nice education consulting process that's part of it.
Awesome. So you want to check it out, go to learningears.com. Gail was special and as nice as she is, she's giving away a free book. No surprise there. Learningears.com. Grab your free copy of the book. It'll give you, check out the program, and it'll definitely give you the help that you are looking for. Now let's get into the episode. Welcome, Rachel Wise. Really great to have you here. Rachel, tell us a little bit more about yourself and what you do.
I am a certified school psychologist, and I'm a licensed behavior specialist with the master's degree in education. I spent a lot of time working in schools and also in homes, with families, in schools with students, with teachers, administrators, counselors, and also with students out in the community. And in my training, I learned a lot of effective behavior strategies that are research-based, evidence-based. And when I first started learning these strategies, I was actually working in a group home with adults with developmental disabilities. And even though the strategies were, a lot of them were for children, a lot of them were based on behavior principles, and some of my clients needed some of those strategies as well. So I started putting some of those practices into place in the group homes that I worked in. Things like just phrasing things in a positive way instead of saying, don't do this, telling them what they can do or giving a clear direction. It could be things like just providing empathy and letting them know that you understand and you're listening. It can be praising them and telling them they're doing a great job with something. So doing those different things, I saw how effective it was, and I saw changes starting to happen within my clients. And I was like, if this is working here, it will probably work other places. So when I started working in schools, or even something as simple as babysitting or tutoring, because those are things that I've done, I would try the same strategies and the same approaches, letting them know what they're doing right, giving them empathy, letting them work for something positive, helping them work on setting just like small goals for themselves and achieving them, things like that. But then I started noticing, working in all these different places, not everybody had the same strategies under their belt, which is understandable. So we needed to get like some training out there. But a lot of times when you would put the training out, some people would have it and some people wouldn't, or some people would take the training seriously and they would implement the strategies and some wouldn't. So there would be a lot of inconsistency in settings within a school, even within a home between mom and dad, or how the student is handled in the classroom versus how they're handled at home. So I wanted to try to bridge some of those consistencies. And also counselors sometimes have strategies that they might recommend to a parent, but maybe the teacher's not hearing that strategy. Mm-hmm. Or maybe a school counselor is telling a teacher, hey, let's try this, but the parent isn't getting that. And sometimes people don't like to be told what to do. They don't want to hear, you shouldn't do things that way, you should do it this way. But when we find things ourselves, we're more likely to try them or do them. So I wanted to create a database online where everybody can go, counselors, teachers, educators, even maybe a high school student that says, hey, I'm really struggling with focus. What can I do mm-hmm. to help myself? just to kind of get everybody on the same page with what's research-based, what does the evidence say, and where can we find it? So if we're having an IEP meeting about a student that might have trouble with focus or following directions, hey, we all went to this site. We know this site is research-based. We know because we see the peer-reviewed journal articles, you know, from Eric or any of the different scientific behavioral journals or educational journals, and we're on the same page now. We're coming to this meeting. We know what the strategies are. Okay, how are we going to implement them now? So it's not about, does this work? Does that work? What works with a child? What doesn't work? It's here's the database. Here's what the science says. And a lot of times people say like, well, this doesn't work with my child, or that doesn't work with my child. Yes, we know every child is different and we want to take their interests and their choice into consideration. But at the end of the day, if we're trying the scientific research-based strategies and they don't work, then we know we need a higher level of care. And we can say, here's the data, here's what we've done, we're following the science, and it's not working. Just like if somebody was diabetic and we're trying what the research says, we're not going to throw that away and say, oh, that's not working, so we're going to do something else, like scream at them to make them check their blood sugar. No, that's not going to be effective. If the science isn't working, then what else do we need to do for that patient? And it's the same thing when it comes to behavior and academics. If an academic approach is not working, then what do we need to do next? And it's not to try something that's not in the research. It's to keep going into the research to the furthest extent possible.
Well, I think you bring up a really good point, Rachel, because I think parents always, they want to jump right into what can I do? And like start having, before they have kind of some of the background of how all this has to work and the consistency that's required, they just start doing it. And then they stop doing it because one thing or another, and then they try another thing, and then the kids see this whole inconsistency and they kind of rip it apart. And so I think, you know, your point here about parents taking the time to educate themselves on a particular strategy or whatever it might be before they actually start to implement it is a big piece.
Right. And we know that things aren't going to happen immediately. You know, some strategies you might put in place and maybe right away you will see something positive, and that's great. But this is a combination of things that need to happen consistently over time for a period of time to see a difference. Just like you're not going to work out one day, eat healthy one day and go, oh, I lost 10 pounds. No, you have to make these changes and you have to understand them in a holistic way in order to make an impact.
It often,
I mean,
you're 100% right. I mean, I was thinking before you said it, like, it's kind of in the diet and exercise world. It's like, you're not going to see overnight results, and consistency is key because kids feed off of that. They want the consistency. I mean, my guys, they want the routine.
Right. So
it's a matter of changing the mindset too.
Right. And predictability for them is really important. You know, knowing what the expectations are, knowing how the caregiver or the teacher is going to respond, knowing what their expectations are, and not just what they need to do, but also how can they get to the things that they enjoy. A lot of times people hear like reward and they think, oh, you did a good job, here's a sticker. But that's not really what it is. Like, just as an example, you're not going to climb up 100 stairs for a sticker, but you might climb up to slide down the most fun slide. So you have to look at, what are we working for, and does it make sense for the individual? Nobody's going to do something that doesn't make any sense for them. If someone takes you to 2 acres of land and says, mow this grass because I told you to, that means nothing to you. But if it was your grass and you cared about the appearance of your lawn, you're going to want to do it. So it's all about, it's that intrinsic piece, and how do we build that for children so they feel like, hey, this is worthwhile and it makes sense. And it's not just because you told me, but I don't understand or get why.
Well, it's a fascinating thing, right? So in some of the business background, you know, I've noticed that people don't take the time to train, right? So they'd rather not take the 2 hours that it takes to train somebody so that they can save 40 hours of disruption later on. And it's very similar with parents. It's like, parents are tired, right? We can all relate, yeah. You know, and some kids are really good at wearing us out. You know, they kind of know that that's part of their strategy, right? Mm-hmm. If they're tired and I can wear them out, I can get what I want, kind of thing, right. and here we have to kind of put that final effort in, you know, and say, okay, I'm going to put this 2 hours in to build this strategy, and even if it doesn't, we don't know that it doesn't work if we're not consistent with it and we don't, you know, put it into play. And I think the other piece is the parents, either if there's two parents involved, that they're both on the same page.
So important.
Right?
Yeah. And that can cause a lot of stress for children too. If, you know, one parent is implementing strategies in an effective way, and another parent is, you know, screaming or leaving or getting frustrated and not taking the time, then the child doesn't really know what to expect. And that creates like inconsistency and frustration for the child in the environment. So, you know, I just want to say too, that this is not something that is easy. There's a lot to it, and it's a combination of many things. And we can say about any situation, I don't want to do all that, that's too much effort. But then we can't complain or be upset when it doesn't go in our favor. So if we have a child that's not listening or not going to school or sleeping all day or not doing chores or screaming at us or tantruming, if we're not willing to do the work, then that's what it is. And we have to accept that. We're basically saying, okay, that's what it is. Just like if you don't take care of your garden and all your flowers die, you didn't take care of it. And then you accept that's the reality. If you want to do it, you're going to put all the effort in, and you can't do it halfway. You know, you have to do it, and you have to be there and decide, like, this is what I want from my child, or just say whatever happens, happens, and we'll deal with it as it comes.
So let's do this. Let's talk a little, because you sent us a lot of great content and your site, which we'll include in the show notes when we promote the episode, is really a great resource. But you kind of gave us like a cheat sheet. So maybe let's walk through and give parents like some usable things that they could do right now. I mean, we're home pandemic-wise, wherever you are in the country, but we're also home for the holidays with our kids. So maybe as we head back to school, in whatever way, shape, or form that is, we could talk a little bit about like effective behavior strategies to implement.
Okay. I'm just going to go over some basic things and even some things that I just do at home. And I think this is especially relevant right now with a lot of kids at home. One thing we notice about kids is that they like to touch things a lot, at least most kids. Especially little kids, they're pouring things out. They're grabbing things with their hands. They want to get into this and they want to get into that. There's a reason for that. You know, as humans, we want to touch things. We want to feel things. We want to explore things. We want to experience things. And that's why a lot of times students in school are trying to touch materials or talk to their friends or get out of their seat because they want to interact. So let's say your child at home, your three-year-old, goes in and pours all the Cheerios all over the floor while you're doing something else in the other room, and you just cleaned up five other messes, and the last thing you want to do is clean that mess up, and you're upset, especially because you told your child not to go into that cabinet. So you can, you know, say, what were you doing? What were you thinking? You better clean that up right now, and kind of shame them and get on them and teach them that's wrong. Or you can kind of look at it as, what are they trying to get at here? And then teach them that replacement skill. So, wow, I see you're really interested in touching this or pouring it out. Here are some things you can pour out. Let's go in the sink and do this. Oh, mommy, that's so exciting. You know, hey, maybe I'll give you some cups and you'll pour water out. Maybe you'll mix a little ketchup in because you're in the bathroom and you're in the sink and you're having fun. And now it takes, you know, it away from you did something wrong to you actually did something right, but let's do it in a way that is respectful to everyone, you know? So yes, you're getting your needs met, but you're not pouring Cheerios all over the floor. And when it's a three-year-old child, you don't want to give them that long, drawn out explanation. So you have to think about the age, but it's really about teaching the replacement skill and giving them something that they can do. And that really shows a level of empathy because you're showing them, I care about your needs and what you're getting at. How can we make this work for both of us? And it's also showing them, hey, you have to consider everyone, but yes, you can get your needs met. So that's just an example of kind of like teaching a replacement skill or redirecting them.
Mm-hmm. And it's a redirecting, it's remembering to redirect too. Cause I mean, I'm the worst at it. I'm the beast from Beauty and the Beast. It's like, ah!
I get it. I think we've all been there. Like, what did you just do? Like when my daughter took purple marker and just colored all over her legs. And you know, for her, it's like, I'm a little artist. And what happens when I do this? And for me, it's like, this isn't coming off and we're scrubbing in the bath and what's going on? So.
Right.
Last week, all three of them had broke the same lamp. And last week it broke. And I was just like, now all three of you have broken the lamp. And I could have like completely, yeah. Everybody can Monday morning quarterback, but we got to do that before it happens.
Yeah, it's important to think about like natural and logical consequences. So if your child pours all the cereal on the floor, you don't want to put them in the corner. That's not teaching them anything. And it's not going to make them say in most cases, oh, I don't want to go in the corner again, so I'll never do that again. Instead, they'll probably be looking for something else to do to meet the same need if they don't do that. So we want to teach them, if you do make a mistake, you know, if you do pour everything out or you do knock something over, how can we help clean it up? And we have to think about their level and what's appropriate. You're not going to tell a three-year-old to clean up 500 pieces of Cheerios all over the floor, but maybe they could pick up 10 pieces, and maybe you could make it a game. You know, here's 10 little cereal guys that want to go in this bag. Let's put them in one at a time, and then let's go play in the sink with some of these materials that we do have. And you want to build it. So if at 3 years old, they can pick up 10 pieces, then at 5 years old, maybe they could pick up 20 or 30. So we want to look at the developmental level and what's appropriate. And we can apply that to anything. So if we want them to clean their room, you know, we can very easily break that up into small manageable steps. Okay, for 5 minutes, I'm going to set this timer and you're just going to work on that dresser top. Where are the things on the dresser top going to go? And then as soon as you're done with that, yes, you may do this, or you may go play your video game or whatever it is that they're trying to get at. And also just going back to the consequences, like the natural and logical, let's say your child doesn't want to wear their coat outside. And you're going from the house.
We've all seen that one.
Yeah, you're going from the house to the car, and you know they're going to freeze, and they're refusing. Sometimes just saying, you know, okay, let's go outside. The second they get out, they're like, oh, I want my coat, because it's just that level of control and that level of understanding, you know. And sometimes they just have to experience things for themselves in order to fully get it. I remember when I was little, my mom said, "Don't touch that iron. I'm leaving the room." And I was like, you know, what's going to happen? What's the worst that's going to happen? So I tapped it and I burned my finger and I never touched it again. It wasn't her telling me not to do it. It was my experience. So obviously there's a fine line and we don't want to do that in every situation, but we have to weigh like when it's appropriate to kind of let them take those little leaps and see, hey, you know, maybe my mom was right and I should put that coat on, or I should stay away from that, or my dad was right.
Right. I want to reel back on something, because I wanted to ask this question to somebody with your background for a while now. We always talk about handling goals from a parent's perspective, from a like a feet, heart, head. So, you know, get the body and then, you know, the physical, social, emotional, cognitive that we all studied in college, right? Yeah. Behavior is tricky, right? So it's kind of like, how do you prioritize the behavior versus you know, sleep, nutrition, your base Maslow needs? When does it, you know, behavior become the top priority kind of thing?
Well, I think, you know, if a child's not getting a good night's sleep, that's going to impact their behavior. And that's going to make whatever strategy you try maybe be a little less effective, because if anyone's cranky or tired, they're not going to be themselves. So if a child's having trouble sleeping every night, definitely want to talk to the pediatrician and see what they recommend. But, you know, there's not always a fix. Some kids, no matter what you do, have trouble sleeping through the night. And we want to consider that. We still want to apply the behavior strategies, but we want to keep that in mind. Nutrition, too, so important. There's a lot of websites online called, you know, I just found one article, Easy Clean Eating for Weeknights, 25 meals. And I'm like, this is great. Literally everyone took 20 minutes. And it's awesome. You know, maybe you can't make one every night, but if you start with one, like, I think we want to get kids into a habit of realizing why it's important to put healthy food in our body. Like I tell my son sometimes, you're not going to put ketchup in a car. It's not going to work properly. It needs a certain type of gasoline. And it's the same thing for us. Like, we need certain foods to be at our best. So I think that, you know, eating healthy, exercising, definitely. I just found that stretching is extremely beneficial. And there's a ton, and research even shows that, that it's helpful for focus, it's helpful for mood, it's helpful for self-esteem, it's helpful for weight loss. And a lot of kids say, like, I don't want to exercise, I don't want to work out. But the greatest thing right now is there are literally 5 minute, and I bet you could even find 3 minute or 1 minute videos on YouTube that have every type of exercise. I mean, they have dancing, they have stretching, they have yoga, they have Pilates, they have running in place. They have, you know, fun stuff for kids, counting backwards from 100 while you're dancing, so you could be learning too. And I think incorporating those things into every day is going to show us improvements in behavior naturally. Even if it's, you know, we're going to do a 5 minute video and then we're going to play Super Mario Brothers together. Like, whatever it is, just to give them that, you know, structure of having movement in their day, because it makes such an impact on mental health. And it also helps with the parent-child bond or the teacher-student bond. If you're working out with your child, or the counselor, if you're working out with your client or your students or your children, you're going to make a natural impact. So a lot of the behavior challenges that we see can easily be mitigated with some of these proactive strategies, like the clean eating or eating healthier, the exercise, the sleep, and also the understanding of the need for, I'm like losing my voice here, sorry, multi-sensory exploration for kids. Kids don't want to sit and listen to someone talk and talk and talk. Nobody does. You know, they don't want to be forced to do things that make no sense for them just because they feel threatened to do it. They want to feel understood. They want to feel like their life has meaning, and they want to feel like their needs are met. And when those things come into play, the behavior naturally improves. And there are a lot of little ways that we can make them feel meaningful, and I can talk about some of that as well.
Yeah, please do, because I feel like, you know, again, I like to relate to what's going on, you know, my own personal life. It's like sometimes I feel like I talk to them like I'm the boss, you know, like, and that was kind of the way I was raised, and it, and I guess that's what we learned from, but it doesn't work.
Because people don't want that. Just like adults, we don't want
correct that either. Correct. My wife and I were having this conversation last night. It's just like, you know, I have to work. It's more work on me than it is, you know, than having the children do any work. It's more, you know, remembering that, hey, let's speak to them as simple as speak to them as you want to be spoken to.
Right. Exactly. Speak to them with that level of respect, so they know, like, I'm cared about and I matter and my life has purpose. So I think that, like I talked about before, empathy is a big one. You know, like, my daughter can hit my son and my son could say, oh, she hit me. You know, she's 3 years old. And of course, like, he's the one that got hit. So I want to say, like, oh, no, I'm so sorry. Are you okay? But at the same time, I need to look at what's going on for both of them, help them both feel understood. You know, what happened? What happened with brother? Oh, he snatched my toy. That's why I hit him. That must have upset you. That must have been frustrating. Okay, what can we do? Let's go through it again. Give the toy back to your sister and let's walk through those steps. Mm-hmm. So helping them feel like, I'm hearing you, I understand you, and I want to help you because I see this as a situation you struggled in. Let's work through it. So next time, maybe it will be a little different. Then next time you see them sharing, or you see them asking, or you see them not hitting you, let them know. Wow, that's so great how you shared your toy. Remember what we talked about last time? I see you were really listening. So giving them that praise and letting them know, like, I appreciate the fact that you're listening, you're learning, and now I even see you doing it. How great is that?
Are those separate conversations with the, or are you having a conversation as a team, or are you having separate conversations about that interaction?
I think it really depends on the children and, you know, what they're able to handle and how they're acting in the moment. I think the most important thing is that they're both calm, and sometimes you have to wait for that. You can't force an, you know, going through an interaction when somebody's screaming or not listening or crying. When they're both back in that regular state, you could even make it a fun thing. Hey, let's go through that again. What can we do? And then next time you see them sharing that. So I love that. I love how you're sharing your toy with your brother. So again, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
So again, that empathy, that understanding, of course you're upset. He snatched your toy. You know, I understand how you feel, and that explanation or that modeling of what we can do next time. So I think that's important. I also think it's important that, you know, this is a huge one. If your child comes to you with anything, here's a rock I found, I want to give it to you. Here's a painting I drew. Here's a thought that I had. They want to feel heard. They want to feel like what they're sharing matters to you. If you just say, oh yeah, or okay, or you look away, or you're looking at your phone, or you don't pay attention, you're sending a message to them that it's no big deal. And as a little child, when you're trying to understand your identity in the world and who you are, you want to feel like you matter, and you want to feel, especially from your caregivers, your parents, that what you're doing is important and relevant. And there's so many times that I've seen a child say, look at this picture I drew, for the parents to go, or just look away. And I think something like that really destroys the connection between the parent and the child. Obviously, no one's perfect. One time you might not notice, or sometimes you might not notice, but we want to make a conscious effort to say, hey, I see that and I hear you and I get where you're going with that.
Yeah, it almost can feel daunting at times. You know, it's like, but you just have to get into a rhythm, into a routine of and changing, and like anything else, you know, just changing the way you react. Like for us right now with my oldest, it's like, the minute something happens, whether he's involved or not, he's like, it's not me. And I'm like,
he doesn't want to hear something about it.
Like, yeah. And I don't even get a word out and he's saying it. So then it just, so it's just like you said, redirecting and almost, you know, retraining the adult.
And it's also setting boundaries with them too. You know, obviously if they're coming to you 100 times in a row, like, they have to have some structure as well. Like, right now, daddy's on the phone on a work call, but as soon as I'm done, we can do blank. So giving them those explanations. Oh, when are you going to be done, daddy? 5 o'clock. When's that? Sometimes we can use visual timers. They have a lot of free visual timer apps on the phone. So if some kids don't know, like, understand the concept of the numbers, they can see the color. When the color is all gone, this is over. And that's a really good way to structure. Kids like structure. You can structure anything. You know, we're going to put this visual timer on for 2 minutes and do jumping jacks. And then what do you want to do? I actually found, my son loves this thing. I found this thing on my phone called Decision Maker. It's like a wheel that you spin and you can put any choices in it. So the other night, he didn't feel like brushing his teeth or going to the bathroom before bed or washing his hands. And we had some time. So I said, let's put five fun things on the spinner and also put brushing teeth, washing hands. He loved this more than anything. So it was like, mommy, give me a piggyback ride. Or it was like, sing a silly song. And we spun it and he loved it. And then when it got to wash hands and brush teeth and go potty, he's like, okay, mommy, this is so fun. Because it wasn't, I said, do this and you're doing it now. It was something that we can do together and enjoy and kind of like add a little excitement to it.
How do you, maybe if you give us a tip or two in explaining to like grandparents and other caregivers, aunts, uncles, what we're doing, like, because they see what we're doing now and it's what they did with us and what, you know, but it's not working. So like, but you're gonna get, we're gonna get resistance, but you're gonna get resistance from someone. How do you, you know, how do you explain that? How do you help refocus them? Or
from the caregivers or the grandparents or the uncles and aunts that may not be on the same page?
Yep.
So just like with any situation, there are some people that will never hear us and will never, you know, say, like they have that old school mentality and they think this is kind of like maybe psychological jargon and they don't want to do it. You have other people that say, I will read it and I'm willing to hear and I'm willing to listen. So I think if somebody's willing to be educated and says, yes, I'll take a look, sharing with them, you know, articles, or even if it's something simple like the cheat sheet, so they don't have to read a whole long thing, or even possibly a video on, you know, what is positive behavior support or what does multisensory learning look like? So if they're willing to do that, I think that's great. I think you have like your three groups, like your no way, your maybe let me look and we'll see how they do with it. And then your yes, like I'm all about this and they want to know all about it.
Yeah.
But I think the more we educate, you know, the better. And I also think something I didn't mention before is just that positive phrasing is so important, you know, and that can be done in so many ways. That can look like walk nicely instead of no running. It can be, you know, come over here and play in the bathroom instead of don't dump that water all over the floor. So, you know, really just kind of letting them know what to do instead of what not to do and thinking about your phrasing or even the earning concept. Like first we're going to do homework, then we're going to watch TV versus if you don't do your homework, you're not watching TV and that's it. Because then right away you get that, okay, fine, then I won't watch it. I don't care. But if it becomes a part of the everyday and the expectation, after a while, you don't even have to say it anymore. I know here in my house, you know, for some kids, it might be, I know here I work on my homework for 10 minutes. I take a break to go outside and play soccer with my brother. And then I come back in and I do another 10. And then my homework's done. As an example, some kids might, you know, work on homework for 2 hours. So you have to look at the situation and what's appropriate. And I also want to say on a side note, since we're talking about homework, if your child is working on homework for 2 hours, where it doesn't seem appropriate and they're crying and they're frustrated and they're upset, then it's important to communicate with the school because they may need some type of modification. And you can see that in a lot of areas. Just like if you say, go clean your room and it's gonna take them an hour and they're crying and they're stomping all over and they're refusing to do it, a modification likely needs to be made where it's something that makes sense for them and they can master it. And we wanna look at like starting them where they are. So if a child can focus for a minute on a task, great, then reward them after a minute with something they want to do. And then next week, let's start at 2 minutes. But you don't want to start at 5 minutes when they're only at one because you're not going to set them up for success.
Understanding that those little wins, it took me a long time to figure it out. But, you know, because a lot of times you look at it as a task added to your day. Right. And it's like, yeah, I got to get this homework done. I didn't realize it, you know, until a few months ago. We actually just offhandedly said something to in a group setting with his teachers. And they were like, oh, we can modify that, or he doesn't have to do it all tonight. Or so, yeah, I mean, communicating is always the best.
Right, sure. Yeah.
And a lot of students too really benefit from that hands-on approach. So if you're working on something at home with your child, like if you're working on math and they don't get it, or you're reading something and they don't understand, trying to bring that to life with pictures, with objects, even with a fun video that might be something that they're interested in, can really be a great way to try to help them like understand the concept and not feel so like defeated and like, this is too much, or it's so boring, or it's so horrible, because some students don't benefit from just reading and reading and reading and reading, or writing and writing, right, or listening and listening. Yeah. They need it broken up. They need novel activities. They need short tasks, and we need to make it varied for them.
Well, and that's, I mean, and I think some parents think that each child learns, because they're your children, they're going to learn the same way.
Right.
And, you know, everybody's an individual, and you can have, you know, if one child that's a really strong visual learner, another one that needs to get up and get moving.
Right.
You know, and so we have to, especially now, because everything is, we go back to like an expression that one of our other podcast guests, one size fits one.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of, and now we've got, you know, kids being taught in the same manner, and the parents, you know, tired and having to kind of, their lives have become homogenous as well.
Right.
So, you know, we've got to create kind of diversity and, you know, a dynamic home where it's pretty static, right?
Yeah. And I think it's important, like I said, you know, to think about the child's interests, you know, like, and you want to build that in, and their strengths. That's what you want to build into whatever you're doing. So if they love soccer, if they love video games, if they like drawing, if they're really good at doing things with their hands or building, they love basketball, whatever it is. If they love doing nails, hair, it doesn't matter. How can we make that, you know, a part of whatever it is that we're trying to do with them, and also say to them, we get that this is important to you and we want you to be able to do these things. It's just a lot of it comes down to teaching them about self-care. You know, when you take a shower, when you learn information, when you're nice to a friend, you're actually caring for yourself. You're giving your body what it needs. You're giving your body exercise, social interaction, knowledge. These are all things you need to be successful in life as you move forward. So I think it's really important for them to understand, like, this is why it's important to do these things, but what you want is also important. And I hear that. And I want you to have those things.
It makes sense. You don't, I mean, even for myself, it just, you never think that way. You're here to take care of them. The transition from, you know, baby to now, these little, they're little human, you know, little adults. It's like, you gotta give them their voice, and it's, and let that come about slowly, but let it happen.
Right. And transitions is a big thing too. Like if somebody came to you right now and said, Brian or Darren, shut this off and come do this with me now, you'd be like, what do you mean? Right. But if something important was coming up and they said, hey, look, something's going to happen important in 10 minutes, I need you guys to kind of shut this down, it would give us a little preparation to do so. So walking in your child's room and saying, turn that computer off, it's time for bed, is never going to be as effective as a nightly routine of, hey, at this time, we're going to shut this down. Or even coming in 15 minutes early and saying, hey, 15 minute warning, bud, we got to shut that off because we need our rest.
Right. You know? That's vital. So just
keeping that in mind. And some kids, 15 minutes, they don't understand what 15 minutes means. So they need those countdowns, or they need that time structured for them. And sometimes you don't need the timers. You can say, okay, you can watch a 15 minute video and then we're going to shut it off.
Yeah.
You know, or you can say, you can read 5 pages in your book and then we're going to turn out the lights, or whatever it is to kind of structure that time for them.
Uh-huh.
Another big thing too, is that when a child doesn't know when something's going to end, it can feel very insurmountable. So giving them that, that's why with my daughter, okay, pick up 10 Cheerios. She can clearly see, okay, as soon as I pick up those 10, it's over. So giving them that structure of how long are you going to be doing this is very big.
It's funny. I'm hearing this, like the mathematics of behavior.
Yeah.
Right? And it's, how often do we, I mean, my daughter actually said to me the other day, she's 9, right? She goes, Dad, can you do that countdown thing where I got 30 seconds to get, you know, to do this? And she asked me to do it, right? I thought it was hilarious. But you're constantly doing that with time. And I think, you know, your point there is really important, that developmentally, sometimes they're not ready. They can't tell time yet. So they need other triggers. And I love this other idea with the decision maker, because that's like, you know, that nightmare where you're standing in front of the Subway guy and he asks you what you want on your sandwich. And you're like, really? 100,000 choices? But it seems to me like, you know, I think that's one of the things that makes us, you know, our generation different than, you know, our parents' generation is, you know, we have so many choices to make on a daily basis. And our kids are constantly making, you know, massive, these, you know, my son's more, he kind of knows what he wants. So it doesn't matter if there's 1,000 choices. I'm like, I want 4 things, but you know, and I'm more along with my daughter where it's like, you don't overwhelm me with the, you know, all these decisions. Just give me what,
like, what should I do now? Kind of thing.
Like, what did they say to me the other day on that? And when we were having lunch, Brian, it's like, I said, just give me a burger, right? And then she said, well, do you want cheese? You know, I want to say, it was like, it was craziness.
Overwhelming. But I was actually thinking of an old friend of mine who used to sit in the drive-through forever, and I used to think, come on, just make your order. And I was thinking how he would have benefited from that wheel. Just hit the wheel, it will tell you what to get, and then move on.
Yeah, off and running, right? Yeah.
You know, speaking of like the grandparents, I know some people don't have or might not be comfortable with technology. And you know, something like a visual timer can be purchased on Amazon. Something like making choices, if you don't have an app wheel, you can write it down on paper, stick it in a jar, you know, stick your hand in that jar and pull it out. Hey, what are we going to do right now?
You know, grandma has one of those old school baby timers that she could turn on.
Yeah, the kitchen timers, right?
Right, yeah, absolutely. Yep. I want to dive into educationandbehavior.com real quick to kind of get a feel. There's so much there. And, you know, maybe you can give us an idea of, you know, where does a parent start? How do I find the information that I'm looking for? How do I even know what I'm looking for? All that good stuff.
Okay. So if you do go to the homepage, educationandbehavior.com, if you're on mobile, there's kind of like that hamburger menu on the left corner, top corner, which is a drop down. If you're on desktop, there's going to be a menu on the right hand side, on the top right. There's also a translate widget for any language pretty much around the world. And basically, you're going to look for your category. So, you know, if you have concerns, let's say that maybe your child is showing symptoms of ADHD, where you have concerns about behavior and you're not sure what strategies to try, or you need some math strategies. You look on the side, you pick your area, and then you kind of just scroll through. There's also a search feature. So let's say it's, you know, math problem solving or multiplication or focus or hyperactivity or impulsivity. You would type it in the search and then the articles would come up.
Wow. No, it's a great, I mean, you definitely categorized it really well. And then the search feature, and then you offer, and we'll kind of put a link in as well, a guide for parents and teachers, building confidence and improving behavior in children. And, you know, you mentioned it's almost like a compilation of a bunch of things you've written.
Yeah, I took about, I took 10 of our top articles. A lot, if you do a Google search, like how to help a child with behavior problems or behavioral strategies for defiant behavior, you'll see a lot of our articles on page one of Google. So I took a lot of those top articles and I compiled them into one book. You know, if parents do just want to kind of read through it at home and not have to go on the site and find specific articles, they'll have it all there in one place for them. And that's available on Amazon.
That's awesome.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll definitely include all of that, you know, in the show notes with today's episode and make sure that all of our followers, you know, check it out and become your followers. So Rachel Wise, we really, really appreciate it. This was great. Again, I say to a lot of our guests, and you're definitely one of them, this is probably not the last time we'll have you on.
Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
And we definitely appreciate it. Rachel Wise with educationandbehavior.com. Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you, Rachel. Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Sound Foundations for Parenting podcast with your hosts, Darren and Brian. Find them on social media at Sound Foundations for Parenting. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please leave a review and subscribe. And we'll catch you next time on the Sound Foundations for Parenting podcast.